Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. According to the New York Times this week, when Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel came to the United States for another round of tense talks with the Obama administration, he got a decidedly warmer welcome from one of the rising Republican stars on Capitol Hill, Representative Eric Cantor, the incoming majority leader of the House. Of course, what the New York Times did not mention was that Eric Cantor is a Zionist, a Jewish individual. But for some reason, they don't really want to point that out. But while Mr. Cantor and other newly empowered Republicans are easy to promote themselves as Israel's staunchest defenders in Washington, the reconfigured American political landscape is a more complex and unpredictable backdrop for Middle East peacemaking. Scores of Tea Party-backed candidates are entering Congress, many of whom favor isolationist policies, and are determined to cut American foreign aid regardless of its destination. Rand Paul told the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, an influential pro-Israeli lobbying group, that they were going to disagree about the need for foreign aid and suggested that they move on to other topics, according to a person briefed on the meeting. One of the first things Congressman Cantor can do is to make sure that his colleagues vote for aid to Israel, said Senator Charles E. Schumer, Jewish Democrat of New York, who also met with Mr. Netanyahu. Mr. Schumer and others, especially Jewish congressmen, worried that support for Israel in Congress, long a bipartisan article of faith, could become politicized in a way that will end up harming Israel's interests. In the recent election, the administration's Middle East policy became a partisan issue, seized on by several Republicans who voted that President Obama had intended to make tougher lines against Israel, and they intended to keep him at his promise. Ellen West, a black Republican, focused on it with great success in a heavily Jewish coastal district of Florida, and Representative John A. Boehner, the Ohio Republican, who is the House Speaker designate, sent out fundraising literature aimed at Jewish voters, criticizing the administration for its pressuring of Israel on issues like settlements. That was the first time that I had seen Israel used in a partisan political way, said Representative Gary A. Ackerman, a New York Democrat and outgoing chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on the Middle East and South Asia. As a practical matter, lawmakers do not have the kind of leverage over Middle East policy that they have on matters that require congressional approval, like the arms treaty with Russia currently being blocked by Senate Republicans, or big-ticket appropriations like the health care law. But Congress is far from powerless. According to the New York Times, lawmakers can apply pressure on the margins by attaching strings to financing for the Palestinian Authority, pushing for tougher sanctions against Israel's hostile neighbor Iran, or by questioning weapons sales to Arab states. And they can club the White House in the court of public opinion, as they did last April when nearly two-thirds of the members of Congress signed letters to Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, urging the administration to defuse tensions with Israel over settlement construction. While the White House did not back down from its demands, Mrs. Clinton subsequently gave two conciliatory speeches to Jewish groups, reaffirming the American commitment to Israel's security. With powerful friends like Mr. Cantor, a Virginia Republican and one of the highest-ranking members of Congress, the Israeli government was viewed by some as one of the big winners of the midterm elections. The Republican-controlled House, analysts say, will be more inclined to defend Mr. Netanyahu, even against Mr. Obama, who has reportedly clashed with the Prime Minister over the President's demand that Israel freeze settlements to advance peace negotiations with the Palestinians. The administration has to take into account that Israel now has a friendlier forum, said Abraham H. Foxman, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, a Jewish advocacy organization. It will therefore think carefully about doing things. Well, Mr. Foxman is the usual fox in the hen house, who is very pro-Israel and comes out of the Bolshevik history lesson that we've had in the past in the Soviet Union. He's a man who has tried to help destroy freedom of speech in America with his hate crime laws. We are very, very cognizant of Mr. Abraham Foxman. At any rate, the New York Times says that Mr. Netanyahu's post-midterm election tour of the United States seemed to reflect his more powerful political backing. He delivered a speech calling on Mr. Obama to harden his policy toward Iran, and when the president voiced measured criticism of Jewish housing in contested East Jerusalem, Mr. Netanyahu's office fired back a defiant response. The night before, Mr. Netanyahu met with Mrs. Clinton in New York to try to salvage Middle East peace talks. He sat down with Mr. Cantor in his hotel suite. The two men discussed the Republican triumph in the elections and the existential threat that Iran posed to Israel, according to Mr. Cantor. "It's my strong belief that the U.S. security goes hand in hand with Israeli security," Mr. Cantor said in an interview. "Whether this administration puts this into practice or not is another question, but that is the stated position of the administration." Yet the Tea Party-backed lawmakers remain something of a mystery. One of their brightest stars, Marco Rubio, went on a personal trip to Israel days after winning the Florida Senate race. But pro-Israel analysts point out that Mr. Paul once said that he did not view an Iran with one nuclear bomb as a threat. Though he has subsequently been more hawkish, Mr. Paul did not reply to a request for comment. To be sure, there will be many other Republican voices staunchly in Israel's corner. I find it very interesting that the United States, which is supposed to be the strongest country in the world, kowtows to Israel all the time. It's really quite disgusting for an American to watch this sort of thing, to pander to this small, vicious country that has invaded its neighbors over and over again, killing thousands of them, and then telling the United States that it had better kowtow to Israel's needs and vote tens of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, for the defense of Israel, when in fact our true friends in the area of the Middle East are those that are opposed to Israel. In other words, I'm talking about these nations that are Islamic, that have the oil that we need in order to run our machines. And yet we continue to protect Israel, which is seen as anathema by these Muslims, whose oil we need, as I say, in order to run our economies. Another thing that has opened up recently is that the United States has warned Israel that WikiLeaks are about to be released. Washington has warned its ally Israel of potential embarrassment from the expected release of U.S. diplomatic cables on whistleblowing websites. A senior official from Israel, quoted in Haaretz, said that it has been informed that WikiLeaks plans to release hundreds of thousands of diplomatic cables, some of which could include confidential reports from the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv. The Americans said they view the leak very seriously. They don't know when they will be released on the Internet and what exactly they say, but they don't want Israel to read about it in the newspapers. Embassy spokesman Kurt Hoyer, contacted by AFP, declined to comment, except to say that such leaks could put lives at risk. He said that the cables date from the past 5 years and include media reports, talks with politicians, government officials and journalists, as well as evaluations and various analyses by American diplomats regarding their host countries. Well, it's going to be very, very interesting. In fact, on my website, GeoWatch, today, I have a huge news story at the very top of the page, page one, about the war criminals of Israel, who became war criminals when they invaded Gaza and created war crimes. And their involvement has been released on several websites, and it's being linked on GeoWatch so that you can read those particular articles. And it seems that the Jewish army, the Israeli army, the Zionist army, the dogs of war in the Middle East are very upset because it seems that Israeli people love to travel around the world and wine and dine at large restaurants and hotels. But by having their names and their pictures published all over the world as war criminals in Gaza, many of them will be afraid to do anything. They'll be afraid to leave the country for fear of being arrested. And this, they think, is going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on recruiting. They will pretty much shut it down in many areas of the country, because the Israelis love traveling so much that they would rather not fight for Israel than to have it so that when they leave the country, they might be arrested for a war crime that they were told to commit. So at any rate, you can find that on the front page of GeoWatch for right now. And you can also find it other places. You can find it on Google, etc. Just ask for Israeli war criminals, stolen document published all over web, and viral multiplication of the information has taken place. Just put something to that effect into a Google search, and you'll find it'll be very, very easy. And you can also look at the WikiLeaks that have come out that have shown the tortures by the United States and by Israel of people in Iraq and Iran, and also of people in the Palestinian area. It's not a very good world that we live in these days, and I hate to bring these things up, but we're not living in a very good country right now. We're living in a very vicious, headstrong world and a country that loves to torture people, because our country is in love with becoming and maintaining its status as an empire. Empires are known all over the world for torture, for sadisticness, and the United States is right in the middle of the mayhem and is sinking its teeth into the backs of people who really just live overseas in areas that the United States wants to control. And when they rebel against the United States, we refer to them usually as with some kind of a slur, saying that perhaps that they are basically terrorists. Whereas I would think that the real terrorist would be a country like the United States or Great Britain that flies thousands of miles away with bombs and with missiles and hurls them at other people inside their own borders. For instance, hurling missiles and shooting at people inside Afghanistan, who we refer to as insurgents, and then we refer to them as terrorists. Seemed to me that the United States and Britain, who are invading these areas, are the real terrorists. We're the ones who are putting pressure on these people, and we're exerting terror. Look what we called our attack on Iraq. We called it shock and awe. Shock and awe. They wanted to shock these people and fill them with awe at our power. And if that's not terrorism, I don't know what is, because basically we're hurling bombs at people, and when they hurl bombs at us, we call them a terrorist. So obviously when we hurl a bomb at them, We should also refer to ourselves as terrorists because, in my opinion, that's exactly what we are. We are terrorists. In fact, we are probably the largest terrorist nation in the world. And it's really a disgusting thing when you think about it. There was an article in Al Haram Weekly, an Arab newspaper, that points out that people in the Middle East were going to try to kidnap tourists to make Israel look like a bad place to go to for vacation. The article says that from Rafah at the southernmost point of the Gaza Strip, Mohammed Al-Hassan, 39, headed to a psychiatric health center in Gaza City on Saturday with his daughter, Arwa, age 7. She appears to be suffering severe psychological stress after she woke up last week to the sound of massive explosions as Israeli military jets shelled farming areas near her district with bombs weighing more than 1 ton. Can you imagine being a little girl and being asleep and 1 ton bombs are falling all around you? How do you think your daughter would feel if that was happening? And wouldn't you consider it a terrorist act by the United States or by Israel to drop 1 ton bombs all around you? I would certainly think so. Well, according to the article, Arwa's family home shook with every explosion and the windows shattered, causing the child to wet herself, suffer fright nights, and be unable to concentrate. These are the same symptoms she suffered over a year after the end of the war on Gaza, where her district was also targeted by Israeli bombers, who were basically terrorists. The shelling of several areas in Gaza goes hand in hand with an Israeli campaign to liquidate members of the Army of Islam, a small Islamic group that embraces the jihadist doctrine. The jihadist doctrine is basically a doctrine that that Muslims should attack those who are trying to destroy Islamic countries. It's basically the same doctrine that America has, that we should attack countries that are against our empire. We are basically materialist jihadists, whereas the Arabs still believe in God, so they are basically divine jihadists. I fail to see much of a difference. Israel claims that the group plotted to kidnap Israeli and American tourists in Sinai. In early November, Israel assassinated Mohammed el-Naman, a leading figure in the group, and last week killed his brothers Mohammed and Islam Yassim, prominent group members. Israel claimed that the three planned to take kidnappings and that it received confirmed intelligence leaking the Army of Islam with kidnapping plots. Well, you know, it seems to me that when any time Israel goes after somebody for wanting to kidnap people, that I've seen Israel kidnap people for many, many years. So I don't see why they should object to somebody acting the way that Israel acts. Pardon me. I mean, why should Israel object to someone doing what Israel does, which is to kidnap people, to beat them up, to get confessions from them, to kill them and bury them in the desert? Why should Israel be concerned about people wanting to do that to them? It would seem to me that they're basically copying them, and that's a form of admiration. They should maybe be a mutual admiration society. Well, you terrorize us, and we'll terrorize you, and we'll both be brothers. But, you know, they, as usual, think that when the Arabs do it, it's wrong, but when the Jewish people of Israel do it, it's hunky-dory. It's just fine. You know how that goes. We've seen this all our lives, people treating other people unfairly. Israel's foreign minister, Avigdor Lieberman, who is not related to the Lieberman in the United States, advised Israel's representative at the UN to submit a complaint against the Palestinians for using phosphorus bombs. Such efforts appear designed to shore up support for Israel's accusations against Hamas to pave the way for a new military operation against Gaza. So, the foreign minister, Lieberman, is advising Israel's representative at the UN to submit a complaint against the Palestinians for using phosphorus bombs, when in fact, the world knows for a fact that it was Israel that was using phosphorus bombs in Gaza. And they were hurling them from their aircraft. It's truly amazing, isn't it? The chutzpah of these people is just beyond belief. Well, recently, North Korea has been acting up as well. And North Korea has been attacking South Korea across a small gap in the ocean there. It seems that the first indication of any problem, according to the news, was that North Korea was reacting to the South Koreans bombing North Korean ships, including I believe they had a submarine there, and the South Koreans were having a naval test, and so the North Koreans wanted to get involved in it, and they surfaced a couple of submarines, or at least one, and according to the news stories, they were shot at. Well, Pyongyang isn't one to allow that to happen very nicely, and so they shot back, and they launched wholesale attacks on these small towns on the island that was just across this harbor, and terrorized the people of South Korea. So now China's upset about it, Russia's upset about it, America's upset about it, the South Koreans are upset about it, and the North Koreans are upset about it. Now, this could lead to another Korean War, which would be catastrophic for America, for China, and for Japan. I mean, all these nations are worried about it. You have to ask yourself, what in the world is South Korea doing having a test right next to North Korea and shooting missiles at them? I mean, that's exactly what the original news story said, and now we don't see that anymore in the news stories. Those stories have been pulled, culled is the word we use, and now there are no mentions of that. Absolutely none. It reminds me of the original stories of the attack on the Murrah building, when they couldn't go into the Murrah building because there were fresh bombs in the building that hadn't gone off yet. And these bombs, the question came up, well, where'd they come from? Well, they were American bombs, is what they were. They weren't the bombs of the terrorists. They were bombs that were placed there by the ATF. So it wasn't looking really too good for the way they wanted these stories to go. And at any rate, it's not looking too good on this North Korean story right now either. But since the pro-American newspapers are all over the world, especially in America, they're going to kiss the underneath of the American government. And the American government will continue to lie about this, as will the South Korean government, and probably the North Korean government and the Chinese. Everybody will be lying. But since we are under the aegis of these newspapers here in America that are run by the enemies of the United States and are many times in the pay of the CIA, which is an enemy of the United States, if you look what the CIA does, it compromises the interests of the United States on many, many occasions. And it's not good. It's just not good. And we have to put up with it because, well, there's nothing else we can do. We don't own these newspapers. They're owned by our enemies. They're owned by the people who are descended from the Bolsheviks of the old Soviet Union, who are people that the CIA loved to work with. They loved the Bolsheviks because they could make deals with them. And the Bolsheviks pretty much had the same mindset as the CIA. They loved to work people over and to agree on doing things that nobody else in the country would know anything about. They would just do it under subterfuge and under stealth and get things done that were not good for America, not good for Russia, but were good for the intelligence communities of the world. And that's what's going on now. So at any rate, we have to worry about the Korean thing and whether or not it's going to get out of control. Then we have another situation recently where when Obama took the Great White Fleet over to India and along the Chinese coast, he was basically threatening these countries with our power, our naval power. And China isn't going to take that from the United States. So what did they do? They set off a missile off of the shore of Catalina Island from a submarine, right where everybody in Los Angeles could see it, right off the coast of California, and said, "Here you go, buddy. This is a signal to you, America, that you're no longer the big kid on the block. There's another kid now, just as big as you, and who will do just the same amount of absurd things that you've been doing to other countries, and we'll shoot a missile off very close to your own shore to show you that we're not going to take this from you anymore. You know, you've got a new superpower on the block, and it's China. And we've got more money than you have. We have the ability to produce more weapons than you have. And since you've destroyed your factories in America and shipped them to China, you can't even rebuild these ships because we're building all the parts. So if you make a war against us, guess what? You're going to run out of parts because you won't be able to make them." And that's basically what the situation is. And this situation was brought about by President Clinton, who's getting money from the Red Chinese Army for his second run for the White House. And when he had to go before Congress for the impeachment, the one thing that would have gotten him was the fact that he was taking money from the Red Chinese Army. But the Republicans didn't want to unseat him, so they concentrated on the Monica Lewinsky deal. And they forgot about the Red Chinese Army payments to the president's campaign. And as soon as they did that, I knew that it was a fix and that they weren't going to get rid of President Clinton. And they didn't want to get rid of him because they figured he would be so weakened that they would be able to get their own weak candidate in, who, as it turned out, I believe was George W. Bush, a very scurrilous character who destroyed our economy, who waged war on huge lies against Iraq, and who sent an army of biracial, multiracial racists and rapists to Iraq to rape their women, to rape their men, to beat them up, to kick them around, and to destroy their country. And that was basically what George Bush did. He said, "We're not going to allow this man, Saddam Hussein, to rape these women." And what does he do? He sends an army of American rapists over there, and American armies are always filled with rapists. Always. Look at the islands of Japan that are occupied by Americans. Those soldiers over there are raping those women all the time, and the Japanese didn't like it very much. And there have been plenty of articles about it. So, you know, the chutzpah of saying that we're going to send people over there to stop women being raped in Iraq is absurd, because our army is basically an army of rapists and has been so historically, because we fill our army with people from the inner city and from country areas where people are used to having their way with women and disrespecting them, and maybe even more so than the Arabs do. At any rate, these soldiers get the job done. They get these women raped, and they find themselves accused and sent to prison for it. So to say that we're there to stop rape, well, it's absolutely absurd. Well, and by the way, another story I found interesting this week was that there are so many Israeli draft dodgers right now that Facebook has started to expose Israel's draft dodgers. And it's kind of unorthodox Facebook campaign so that the Israelis will know who's dodging the draft. Who refuses to fight for Israel? I could see where the Israelis that are being outed for not wanting to fight for Israel would be rather upset by this. If they did that to me, I would be very, very upset, and I'm sure you would be too if they did it to you, in terms of like if you didn't want to fight for America and so forth. Personally, I don't want to fight for America. I consider America to be extremely corrupt. It's run by Israel and the IPAC, the American Israeli Political Action Committee, and by the bankers that they represent. And so I don't have much love for the American Empire. I just consider it to be a piece of trash. Like Nazi Germany was a piece of trash, and the empire of Queen Elizabeth in their control of India and China, where they'd run around beating people up and taxing them, putting them in prison. Same thing in Ireland. They took land in Ireland, they put people in prison, and it created mayhem there. I don't see who would want to fight for any of these governments. Why would you want to fight for something that unjust? Are you out of your mind? Is that all you have to do in life is to fight for scumbags like that, like England and the United States, who are empires? Empires are terrible things. Look at Israel and the problem that Israel had with that empire of the Romans. Had a terrible time with the Roman Empire. And Jesus, the savior of the world, according to the West, didn't particularly like the Roman Empire, although he said, give unto Caesar what Caesar's due. And nonetheless, the entire country was against the occupation of the Romans over the Middle East back then. Why would anybody want to have a country occupying their lands? I wouldn't want them occupying America. In fact, I believe that America right now is being occupied. IPAC is occupying America right now, every day of the week. And they're using their money to pay off congressmen, so they represent IPAC and the bankers and Israel, and they don't represent the people of this country anymore. They represent the banking industrial complex, which is the military industrial complex, which is owned by these bankers from Israel, and it's costing us trillions of dollars in weaponry and in wartime expenditures that we shouldn't have, and it's making the rest of the world absolutely, well, just hate us. They really don't like us at all. And I can't really blame them for not liking us because I don't like us much right now either. Do you like us for us being over there killing people from the air? If you do, I think you need to have your head checked. I have to ask myself, when are we going to come to our senses and stop doing the work of the Israelis? Why do our representatives represent Israel and not the people of the United States? The Israelis are only 2 or 3% of this country. They're not the whole country at all. And how many of you, by the way, have had a chance to have breakfast with your congressman or lunch or dinner and tell him what you wanted him to do for you? I can tell you right now, the chances are not one of you, of the thousands of you listening to my voice right now, have ever had dinner with your congressman and told him what you want. It's an absolute lie that these people represent you and me. They've never met us. How could they possibly represent us? We don't have a telephone with a direct line to their own telephone in Washington. We can't even get a hold of them because we don't have that much money. You have to be a millionaire to talk to these folks for just a minute or two, and that's all you get. But that's usually enough for the congressman to sell out the American people, including you, to give trillions of dollars to the bankers who have screwed the world with their banking shenanigans, including the development of illegal products like derivatives and like mortgages to poor people that the bankers themselves knew the poor people would fail with. And they wanted them to fail with it because the bankers, ladies and gentlemen, make more money on a foreclosure than they do on anything that they save for a person. So why would they want to save a house for you or for me or for anyone? What they want to do is to foreclose on your house Because when they foreclose, there are all sorts of monies that come their way for fees. So we're talking about a very sick country here. Country that believes in the rich, the bankers, etc. The pharmacologists with their expensive medicines. If I were running this country, if it were me, if I were the president, and many of you I know are thinking, oh, thank God Frank Welker's not the president, but if I were the president of this country, I would tell the pharmacologists that we need medicines that are inexpensive. We need to be able to cure breast cancer with medicines that are only 25 cents to 35 cents a pill, wherein you only need one pill a day, so that you could cure these diseases for $10. We don't need any more medicines that cost $100 a month or $100 a day or $100 a week. We've had enough of that. That's ridiculous. We need for these companies to come up with cheap, inexpensive ways to cure these diseases and to get rid of these expensive ways. And we need to pay them to do it. We have all sorts of mechanisms where we could, pay them to make cheap medicines for people, but we don't want to do it. Well, someday we're going to have to do it because these people are just, well, they're cooking America's goose with all of these extremely expensive medicines that they've been developing over the years, and a country just cannot afford this. So they're going to have to do something about it, and if I were president, I'd be telling them, I want you to develop medicines that are cheap. I realize these companies won't make as much money off of cheap medicines, and I don't really give a damn whether they make more money or not. I really don't care. I want the country to treat people who are sick fairly, and I want companies to produce cheap medicines, which they can do the same way they can produce expensive ones. The best medicine in America today is the cheapest medicine, which is aspirin. Aspirin is even good for slowing down the progression of cancers, of slowing down heart disease and strokes because it thins the blood so that the blood can go through the arteries and veins of the heart without blocking and locking up so that the heart can't get oxygen. And it's all helped by aspirin. Aspirin, which thins the blood and allows the blood to flow and allows the different iron platelets to line up far enough apart so that they don't stick together as they go through the heart or go through the brain or any other part of the body. And it's the cheapest medicine in the world, and it's the oldest. It comes from the aspir gum tree and was discovered in Bavaria by the Bayer Aspirin Company. Bavaria is called Bayerisch in German. I lived in Bavaria for a while. It's a very beautiful area. Reminds me a lot of my home in Missouri, which is a very mountainous Ozark Mountain area. And the mountains in Bavaria are pretty much like that, although it's a northern forest instead of a midwestern forest, which is a totally different deal. But a tree is a tree. You know what I mean? I mean, a tree is a tree is a tree, whether it's a evergreen tree or it's one that loses its leaves. Trees are beautiful no matter what. And we have to learn to like our trees wherever we live. I love my trees. I used to camp out all the time. I'm getting a little older now. I don't camp out very much. I don't camp out at all, as a matter of fact. I spend my time at home. I do radio shows. I write things. I put websites together. And I criticize the evils of different governments around this world. If China's doing something evil, I criticize it. If America's doing something evil, I criticize it. If Israel's doing something evil, I'll criticize it. If Iran's doing something evil, I will criticize it. I am an equal opportunity critic. And if you don't want me to criticize you for doing something mean and disgusting and evil to somebody, your only recourse is not to do it. Because if you do it, I'm going to tell on you. I'm going to report it because that's what I am. I am a journalist. I am a reporter. And that's what I do. I sniff out the stink in the world and I expose it and I tell the names of the people who are responsible for it, how it was propagated, and where I think it's going. And I will continue to do that as long as I live, which I think will be a pretty long time. I'm getting up there in years. I'm like 69 years old this next month. But you know what? I'm going to live a long time. My grandmothers lived, they lived to be in their 90s. And one grandmother lived to be 96. They'd put her in a wheelchair and take her from the hospital down to the Baptist church in the small town where she lived so she could get the white rose for being the white orchid for being the oldest lady in town. And she got that orchid for about 35 years. And I'd watch these other old ladies there looking at her and thinking, I hate you. You're getting all the orchids. I can't get one. Why don't you croak and I'll be the oldest lady in town and people will applaud for me when they bring me out in my wheelchair. So, yes, it's true. People, old ladies, they want to get that white orchid. And in many ways, it was unfair that my grandmother lived to be 96 and a bunch of old ladies, they didn't like that. And you can't blame them. They wanted to have their chance, but she just wouldn't give up the ghost. So she kept getting that white orchid. And that's just the way that it is. Anyway, I probably shouldn't have mentioned that. I remember when she finally passed away, she had been living in a nursing home on one side of town, and they were going to just take her straight to the cemetery. And I said, no, she liked that church down there. They brought her down there. I said, let's take the procession and at least take it in front of the church where they have a kind of a horseshoe, a place to bring your car around the front. And we'll stop the entourage right there for about 2 or 3 minutes in respect for the church that she had attended for 50 years. And then the people in the town will know that that we cared enough about that church and about my grandmother to make that sign of respect for them. I remember that the minister said that my grandmother may have lived to be too old because he didn't know anything about her. He couldn't talk to her. She was so old she couldn't hear and she couldn't talk. But I'd go down there every week, which was a pretty long distance. It was 100 miles each way. But I'd go down there and I'd just jump up in bed and hold her. And I'd talk to her right in her ear, tell her that you know, her life was all about love and that I appreciated her and all that. And she never said a thing to me for several years. And my sister went down there with her husband and her children, and my grandmother was lying there all silent, and all of a sudden my grandmother sat up in bed and she said, my grandson is crazy about me. Well, you see, she knew I was there. She knew I was there. She knew I was talking to her. And I knew that she did. And I stood up and I had a little something to say about her funeral. The minister knew nothing about her, so I stood up and talked about how she was so old that when she was a little girl, she wore calico dresses that were made out of flour sacks, and her mother would buy the calico pattern so that she could make her dresses out of calico. And the women then would choose these different designs on the flour sacks so they could make nice clothes for their family. And when she was 7 years old, she got bit by a rattlesnake on the way to school and survived it. I don't believe there's a case of anyone dying from a rattlesnake or copperhead bite in Missouri for the last 100 years, at least anybody over 16. Of course, she was 7 when she got bit. But I bet you her legs swelled up quite a bit. And I used to work with her in her garden in the town where she lived. And she had these little pygmy rattlesnakes in her garden. And we'd get bit by those when we were weeding. And, man, you know, they'd sting, and then all of a sudden your hand would feel kind of like a buzz when the poison got into it. But the pygmies didn't have enough, they definitely didn't have enough poison to really hurt you. They'd give you some pain and make it feel like you couldn't feel your fingers because they would numb out. And, but that's just the way it was. just the way it was. And boy, times have sure changed, haven't they? I mean, we're all living in the cities now. We buy our food at the grocery stores. The Americans are all becoming huge fat hogs, and the world's laughing at them. And it's pretty terrible when you think about it. The nice thing is we have cars to drive our fat up and down the streets with, so it's not all that bad for these large Americans. And I don't mean to put people down. I don't want to criticize anybody. But you know, if you'd get yourself a Vitamix or a Vitamaster and start making green smoothies with green vegetables like bok choy and stuff like that, and ate that pretty much, you could lose your weight. I'm trying to do that now, and I tell you what, I think it works. I've been able to cast off a lot of weight eating that way. And it's a good way to eat. I've always been kind of a raw food faddist all my life. I've been a member of raw food groups, and everybody used to laugh at them. But now people are starting to look at them, especially the younger people, as an answer for a cleaner way of life that allows you to have more energy, to have more health. And when I drink a couple of glasses of green juice, I feel so healthy that I just want to almost jump up and down and scream. I can feel the energy from it. And I can assure you, if you want to know what to do with that kind of a lifestyle, I could give you a reference on YouTube. There's a young man up there. Well, it's you, if you, depending on how old you are, he might be old to you, but he looks young to me. His name is Dan the Life Regenerator Man. And if you go to YouTube and type in Life Regenerator, one word, LifeRegenerator, Life Regenerator, you'll see this young man with his shirt off. He has not 1 ounce of fat. And he loves vegetables and he's very highly motivating. So if you ever wanted to do something like that, and it doesn't take much equipment to do it. You can just take a regular blender and juice down any vegetable or piece of fruit. You don't have to have a Vitamix. Almost anything will do it as long as you use a little bit more time with it. But at any rate, he can motivate you. That man is a motivator. Life Regenerator at YouTube. And if you're a girl, take a look at him especially because he's, you're going to like his body and what he's done with it. He works out 3 hours a day, and he only eats green vegetables through these blenders. And you'll go, "Oh my God, look at that!" And girls, you could look like that too if you ate the same way. You could, you absolutely could. Anyway, that's an extreme way of eating, and I don't think it's for everybody. But Dan. Like he says, "I'm not going to criticize anybody for what they do." So I don't criticize you for anything that you do. He says, "Go on, do the best you can, and I'm not here to criticize you or jump on you. Just live your life the way you want." Any rate, let's get back to what we usually talk about here. Although I'm trying to open up the program a little bit to be a little bit more personal, because we live in a world right now with a depression going on that is extremely unsettling for a lot of people, and I'm trying to make people maybe a little bit happier by trying to open up the radio show to personal anecdotes about my own life that might relate to you and to others, and I'm hoping that maybe I can help you get through the day a little happier than you might be. I mean, if you've been in the stock market and you've lost all your money, or if you've worked all your life for General Motors and you're not going to earn anything for your retirement, it's mostly gone. And maybe I can help you to be a little happier about your life by discussing some of these different things that I have in my life that have meant things for me. I don't have a whole lot of money. I put most of my time into research as a librarian, and I tell you right now, librarians don't make a whole lot of money. Writers don't make a whole lot of money, unless they become an extremely wealthy writer, in which case they do. I was never that interested in that. I just wanted to help the world, to be a better world to live in. And so that's where I've gone with my life, is to try to do research that will help you to understand what's really going on in the world. And what's going on is you're being propagandized by the minority-owned newspapers. They're basically minority-owned. You're being legislated by minority-controlled congressmen and presidents, and your laws are being determined, the legality of them, by a minority-run Supreme Court. Take a look at the Supreme Court. You've got three Jewish people on the Supreme Court: Berger, Kagan, and that lady, what's her name? That old chick up there, what's her name? Anyway, she's up there. And then you've got six Catholics. Hey, didn't everybody hear about Protestantism? I mean, it's the largest group of religions in America. There's not one Protestant up there. Oh, and by the way, the Republicans put these Catholics up there. The Democrats put the Jews up there. Now, you would think that with all these Catholics on the Supreme Court, six of them, you only need 5 out of 9 to pass a, change the law. You would think that these Catholics, by now, since they have a majority, that they would have changed the decisions on abortion. So you can see that it's just a lot of BS. There are not going to be any changes. There are never going to be any changes because the Supreme Court isn't going to do it. The Catholics aren't going to do it. Six Catholics, three Jews, and they won't pass a law outlawing abortion. And they promised that they would. The Republicans promised that's what they were going to do. We represent the Christians of this country, and we're going to stop this murder known as abortion, blah, blah, blah. Well, they haven't done it, and they're not going to do it. And let me tell you why they're not going to do it. If the Republicans passed a law outlawing abortion, guess what? The Catholics wouldn't vote for Republican anymore. Let me repeat that for you. Make sure you get it. If the Republicans put a Supreme Court in there that changes the law and says that it's against the law to have abortion in America because it's murder, the Republicans won't get Catholic voters anymore. It won't get Christian voters anymore. So they're not going to do that. Likewise, the Democrats are not going to make black people wealthy. Because if they do, the black people will become Republicans and they won't vote Democratic anymore. You have to understand that these people are nothing but thugs. They're criminals who want to stay in power and keep you as their vassal. And they're not about to ruin it for themselves. No way. They're going to make absolutely certain that that you don't find an end to abortion and that the blacks don't become wealthy, because the blacks won't vote for the Democrats. If they're wealthy, they'll become Republicans and try to make sure they don't have to pay high taxes. And the Catholics, who are Republicans, if they find out that they don't have to worry about abortion anymore because that's been changed, they'll immediately swing back to being a Democrat. And the Republicans will be out of office. And if the blacks start voting Republican, well, maybe the Democrats will be out of office. Who knows? Eventually, somebody has to stay in office. But you have to think of the way that these things go and what these politicians are thinking. Politicians are crooks. Washington, D.C. is a city of freaks. It's a freak show up there. You have these hoodlums who are in Congress getting money from the wealthy bankers and supporting wars because the banks own the military-industrial complex and they want to be paid back for the little bit that they give the Republicans and the Democrats. So they make sure that we stay at war all the time. So the banks will be happy. A bank, in order to make money, has to loan money. And banks are always behind wars because when there's a war, guess what? The federal government has to borrow money from the banks in order to pay the troops, to pay for the weapons, to pay for the ships, to pay for the gasoline that has to be used to get them all the way across the ocean, to pay for the uniforms, to pay for the housing for the troops, to pay for the wives and their housing, to pay for their children, etc., etc., etc. And they have to borrow money to do it, and where do they borrow it? They borrow it from the banks. So the bankers love war. It's a, peace is a loss leader for the banks. If there's peace, the banks are losing money. If there's war, will they make money? They make money off of every war because guess what? The government has to borrow deep buckets of money from the banks, and the banks make a lot of money off the interest. If they don't loan money, they're not making money. So if you want banks to make money, put the nation into constant war, and the banks will start making money, which is precisely what we have always done. These things are things that you probably haven't thought about too much. I think about them, and I don't know why I do. I just do. I like to look at the long term of economics and politics and so forth. And when you really think the logically, if the blacks were extremely rich, they'd become Republicans. And if there were no more abortion, the Catholics would go back to the Democratic Party. I mean, it's almost hilarious when you think about it. It's so simple. And this is why these things will never happen. The Catholics will remain exploited. The blacks will remain exploited. The American people will remain exploited. The peaceniks will never get what they want because the banks always get what they want. And what they want is war so that they can loan money to the federal government at a high interest rate. And that makes them banking healthy. And but we as citizens of this country could do with banks that really have lost their health, because the health of these banks doesn't help you or me one bit. Having a healthy bank is having a nation at war. Having a nation at war is having a nation that's broke. Why is it broke? Because most of its money is going to the bank. Why is it going to the bank? To borrow the money to pay for the war. And the banks love it, and the banks make the profit off of that money, and you and I find that inflation begins to happen because we borrow so much money from the banks that it just costs more money. And the more that we pay the banks, the higher the interest rates go, and on and on and on. It's a never-ending dish of toil that we have brought upon ourselves with our private enterprise banking system. And our congressmen who will kiss up under these bankers every day of the week. Our congressmen who love the rich because the rich give them money for their campaigns. The congressmen love the rich and they hate the poor because loving the rich means you give your money to the rich. And hating the poor means that you don't have to give money to the poor because you're giving it to the rich. And when you give it to the rich, guess what? The rich will pay for your campaign, but the poor will never pay for your campaign because the poor will never have the money necessary to pay for your campaign. You have to remember these basic things if you are going to have a happy life. Well, that's enough for today. I want to thank you for listening to me and come back again tomorrow and we'll see if we can't have another radio program for you. Thank you and good night.